Let's hear the other point of view that you put together, snapshot.
Well, the other one, yeah. So you don't want to, you don't want to be one of these guys who says, here's a study, and by the way, here are the scans of great responses, but I'm only showing you in the experimental arm. And you go, well, didn't they respond in their control arm too? So there's this other side to this story. So Mrs. S is a 76-year-old, she's an ex-smoker, about 40-pack years. She's a retired psychologist. I guess when she was practicing, it was okay to have a cigarette hanging out of your mouth when you were counseling the patients. She quit about 6 years ago after she had a small myocardial infarction. And apart from her cardiac history, she was pretty well. She presents with the typical cough. She has a right lower lobe mass, hilar lymphadenopathy, extensive liver metastases in her. Biopsy shows, again, P63-positive squamous cancer. She has a solitary brain met, which is treated with SRS. And again, molecular testing, no actionable abnormalities. Her proportion score is lower. It's only about 1%. She therefore goes on to first-line carboplatin and paclitaxel. Minor response progresses after. She gets 4 cycles, and then she has a bit of a treatment break, and then she progresses again. She's got new lung and bone lesions at that point. And we stick her on nivolumab, second line. And not only does she not respond, but her AST and ALT suddenly move up into the 400s range. She feels fatigue. Her bilirubin isn't elevated. We biopsy the liver, and she has a full-blown autoimmune hepatitis.
Wow.
So we speak to our colleagues in hepatology. Not surprisingly, we stop the treatment. We stick her on prednisone. And the one good thing is that she actually responded very nicely to the steroids, maybe because this happened relatively early. We gave her 60 milligrams prednisone and a taper, and her LFTs didn't normalize, but they got down to the kind of grade 1 level. And because her disease was progressing, she went on to what feels a bit like yesterday's treatment. She went on to docetaxel and ramucirumab, but she actually had a great response. And so again, it goes back to the idea that we're always going to need some of these lines of defense. And she's had some neuropathy, but she's about 6 cycles in. She had a pretty good response, and then she got a little bit of progression. We'd had to dose reduce a little bit. And we sat down and we said, okay, well, what do you want to do? She was fairly symptomatic at this point, and she's a deep thinker. And we had law passed in January 2017 called Medical Aid in Dying in Colorado, where one of the states where medically assisted suicide, for want of a better term, is an option. And this lady, who is very smart, understands healthcare, understands because of her background just how people think, she said, look, I don't want to keep doing this. I'm in pain. I feel I'm failing. I've seen other people going through this. I want you to help me with the medical aid in dying. And she was actually one of the first patients who approached me about this. And I can tell you, I felt very uncomfortable.
I bet.
This is not why I went to medical school. What it requires in Colorado and probably in other states is 2 physicians. It requires 1 to certify terminal disease, short prognosis, and then another 1 who actually writes the prescription. And you can swap the roles. What I eventually found something that was helpful for me was I was prepared to be the physician to say she was of sound mind and this was her prognosis, but I didn't write the prescription. I outsourced that actually to a private practitioner, and they get a prescription for pentobarbital, so a very old-fashioned sleeping medication, and they get something like 100 capsules, which they have to open, put into a jar with about 8 ounces of water, swirl it up into a slurry, and they're told to drink it all within 2 minutes. If they drink it much longer, they'll fall asleep without a lethal dose. And it's very important that those people who go through this know exactly that it's going to happen this quickly, that they're not on the bus when they do it, that they've spoken to their loved ones, they know exactly what's going to happen to their body afterwards. It's funny, I lost a lot of sleep over this woman, and then we felt we hadn't heard from the family. So a couple of months later, we phoned her up and she answered the phone. And it was like, I guess you didn't take the prescription. And her argument was, I just wanted it there.
Wow.
And it's very interesting. I think they've now done some studies that the vast majority of these medical aid in dying prescriptions are not actually used.
Wow.
And she's actually in hospice now. She has the prescription. She hasn't filled it. It's still sitting in her desk drawer. But she just wanted it there as her exit path if she needed it.
Very thought-provoking. And I'm kind of curious what thoughts you have having gone through this experience.
I can see that there's a select number of people that physicians will be comfortable being part of the process. As I said, they may not be comfortable being the actual prescriber, and certainly I wasn't. the people you could imagine would be that were people who you felt really get it. They understand what they have, what it means, and they've made an informed decision. The ones where I would feel most uncomfortable is when I would feel like it was the family who was saying, well, what about this? It's so open to abuse if it's not a very informed person doing it.
But, you know, this idea of kind of having as a fallback, you know, if people have these fantasies of terrible things happening, which a lot of times do happen, I mean, it kind of makes sense. And, you know, I could imagine, for example, a physician who was in that kind of clinical situation might do something like that on their own or want to know that that option was there, but maybe it would never be necessary if they had really effective hospice care.
Yeah, I mean, I think, although it's impossible to prove, I'm sure there are some very well-informed patients who know that they have, for example, opiates, and they might know what a lethal dose of opiates were, and that may have happened in the past, and we would never know about it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what they do here, it's really fascinating, really fascinating.